United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
The Lutheran World Federation holds a major meeting in Namibia in South Africa to celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. Why didn't they go to Germany? That's the question we'll ask today of Mary Erling, who is professor of American church history at United Lutheran Seminary, Gettysburg Campus, and the author of The Augustana Church. What's the actual title of that wonderful
book? It's called
book?
The Augustana Story.
The Augustana Story. And you were a visitor to the LWF World Federation Conference in Windhoek.
In Windhoek, Namibia.
Namibia. What's the deal? Why did the Lutherans, they could have gone to Wittenberg, where the Reformation started, and yet they went to this small, unfortunately too little known country in South Africa.
Southwest Africa was the last African colony to be gaining its independence in 1990, and many people listening to this broadcast will probably remember knowing about Namibia during the fight against apartheid. And Lutherans were a very important part of that struggle, and the Lutheran World Federation, too. So one of the strong ties towards Namibia came because of that fight. Now, this was the 12th assembly of the Lutheran World Federation, and there are 145 member churches in the Federation, and 119 of them were represented directly at the meeting. And it was a very rich, full set of days from May 10th through May 16th here during this year. And we went to Namibia partly on the impulse that we wanted to do something special for the 500th celebration of the and commemoration of the Reformation. It was a German colony, so that's part of the answer. Why go to Namibia? Also because of the fight for justice that's going on still in Namibia and reconciliation with former German colonizers. Mm-hmm. Also, Namibia is half Lutheran, and the president is a Lutheran. Mm-hmm. And one of the key leaders in the Lutheran World Federation over the last 10 years has been Raleigh Deffenbaugh, who has been in charge of the Division for Public Witness and Theology. And when he was a law student in the 70s at Harvard, he went to Namibia and helped work on the freedom struggle there, and he also took time out in 1990 to help draft the Constitution in Namibia. So we have strong ELCA connections with Namibia, and it could be that Raleigh had agitated for Namibia being the place to be.
Let's back up and do a little history. This is your specialty and my interest. How did Lutheranism? It could have been Presbyterianism, could have been Pentecostalism, could have been Roman Catholic. But why Lutheranism in Namibia, a predominantly black area of Southwest Africa, come to Namibia? Was it a connection with the German colonization? And if so, the story's got to be a little bit complicated.
It's a very complicated story, and there were missionaries already in Namibia before Germany became its colonizer. And many of these tribes that the Germans met were already Christian and wearing Western dress because of South African connections.
Oh.
There were also Finnish missionary in the northern part of Namibia. And today there are three Lutheran churches in Namibia that cooperate in many ways, but they still have not merged. One comes from the old Finnish mission, and that's the largest. Mm-hmm. And they also are an integrated church. They don't have a separated white and a black church. Then there is a Rhenish mission, a German mission church, a black church. And then there is a third church that is a white German speaking still church.
Okay.
So that is a strong presence also.
What was what was the interest of the Germans in colonizing Namibia? Is it gold, silver, slaves, diamonds?
Actually,
so this is from the start of the 19th century, 20th century?
It was late 19th century.
Okay.
Everyone else had a colony,
yes.
And people kept on pushing Bismarck that they also
we
should have a colony also. And he kept the Kaiser also said, no, we don't want any colonies, we don't want that trouble. But Britain had all these colonies in France and Spain.
Belgium finally got into the Congo late.
And it's not a happy story.
No. Oppression.
The first genocide of the 20th century happened in Namibia. Mm-hmm. The Germans conducted that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a happy story.
No, that's what I was afraid you'd say. And also conflicts about the Second World War when Germans...
Yeah. All of that history is part of that. And then what happened then is that Germany no longer was the colonizer and South Africa stepped in. Mm-hmm. And then South Africa imposed apartheid. Mm-hmm. On the Namibian
things
people.
Went from bad to worse.
Things kind of slid.
The German nationals who still live there, probably a little like the churches in South America, German churches, I don't want to cast aspersions, but they kind of dug in their heels and they remain definitely German. They speak German. They have German-type liturgies and so on. The process of integration is still... If anything, it's cooperation. It's not true integration.
Well,
partly
it's the language issue too, because a lot of there are attempts that they're working on to do a combined worship service right in the city of Windhoek, and they have an English language congregation that's trying to bridge all these different gaps, because the Finnish churches were in a northern part of Namibia, and that's one language group. Then you get the Rhenish mission, that's another language group, and then the Germans are speaking German. So English can become this common language. So when... there is an ability to worship in the same language together, I think that that will be a powerful witness that they will have. One thing that was strange about Namibia today that was odd, we went on tour around the city and we realized that, the presidential palace was built by North Koreans. And the National Museum was built by North Koreans in these hideously ugly... You imagine North Korean art, and then you can see that. And the Chinese are doing the roads. Mm-hmm. And they're doing apartment complexes there. So we are really not so... I realized how ignorant I was about the ways that... these different multinational or these different nations are involving themselves in these African and also in Latin American
places. And the interest there by these countries is still in diamonds. And the country is generally poor agriculturally. There's a lot of deserts or so-so, and the main tourism is not its main industry. Diamond's still one of its main industry, or is agriculture flourishing? What keeps them going?
Cattle herding.
Cattle. Mm-hmm.
Is
mainly
the
in the tribal level.
Well, and they're wealthy cattle herders. I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We ate a lot of meat.
So making a nation out of Namibia was not a given. It's like many of the Western African countries. It's imposed on tribal sovereignties.
Yes, there's all sorts of animosities. But one thing that I learned about Namibia is that the leaders of the Namibians at the time of colonization were much better educated than is true of many of the places where colonizers would come in. They were literate. They had correspondence. They were writing to each other. The connection to South African educational structures. The Germans didn't come and take over very naive, simple people. Mm-hmm. No, these were people with some
already,
capacity for leadership, and they knew what was up.
I think our first theme then, Maria, is that the Lutheran World Federation was there for the 12th Assembly in order to further the cause of reconciliation.
That was a very important theme, and Martin Junge, who's the General Secretary of the Lutheran World Federation, in his report helped us to see that the Reformation slogan of "Here I stand" maybe needs to be reframed today to "Here we journey," so that we see that we're in an accompaniment relationship with each other and we're journeying towards something, but we're not standing pat. And that he used this idea of this hymn, "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God," and to say that the fortress is God acting with us, not in our music, not in our tradition, not in our buildings, not in our places.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is a very powerful message, because we think of standing pat and standing firm as a message that came out of many other of our Reformation celebrations before.
Yeah.
And he really helped me to really reframe what the Reformation should be for us going forward. And we did have quite a bit of conversation about that. What kind of church is it that would put all its eggs in the idea that we're celebrating 500 years, and then what are we going to do on November 1st?
Mm-hmm.
What will happen then?
Yeah.
We have to be, we historians are getting a lot of invitations right now to come and talk to congregations about the Reformation. But unless we have a future orientation for that Reformation, people are going to be tired of listening to it, and they'll just say, okay, we did that, and now we're going to have what? What kind of direction?
We're going to start planning for the 300th anniversary. Mary Erling is our guest today. She is the author of The Augustana Story, a very fine book, by the way, and one need not be have had any relationship to The Augustana Story to enjoy this history, which is full of wonderful anecdotes and insights. I can attest to that myself. And she was also an official visitor to the 12th Assembly of the Lutheran World Federation in Windhoek, Namibia. We're talking about why the LWF, or any great denomination in the world today, would have chosen this small republic in the southwest corner of Africa as the place to meet. Reconciliation was our first theme. I think you mentioned also that justice issues, you were just saying, in fact, during our break, that justice issues were in the forefront for the Lutheran Federation, that "Here I stand" does not mean "Here I stand, pat, and will go nowhere, else.
Here I dig in my heels."
Yes.
Also, I want to say something. I want to do a shout-out to Dorothy Marple, who was a leader in the LCA. In fact, she was the person who was a chair of the Commission on the New Lutheran Church. And she left money in her bequest to the Lutheran seminaries in the Eastern Seaboard to support education in ecumenical work. And about 3 years ago, the faculty fellows that relate to Southern Seminary in Philadelphia and to Gettysburg decided that we would be able to siphon off some of that money each year and collect it into a little pot, and we would use it to fund a special kind of excursion or an event or teaching. And Dorothy Marple's money is lavish enough that we were able to designate $15,000 to support students to go to this trip to the Lutheran World Federation. So 9 students accompanied me and my husband.
Nine,
whose travel was paid to go to the 12th Assembly. And this immersion for them in the middle of the Assembly, with all the contacts they could make with Lutherans from around the world, was extremely rich and stimulating. And I've come back from that realizing that we have really underserved our students when we don't provide for them this kind of immersive experience in the world of Lutheranism or the world of the World Council of Churches. Because if they think that their responsibility as pastors or deacons stops with the chancel or stops with the sanctuary or stops right on the steps of their soup kitchen, they really don't understand the opportunities in their ministry.
Yeah, they need to experience it. In fact, it makes me think of the days gone by. Maybe you were one of them in which our students were given scholarships to go to LWF meetings in the past, some of our colleagues, some of our friends, not just here within this seminary community, but elsewhere, for whom this was a life-changing experience, decision-making, future mm-hmm. planning. So it's got. I think Dorothy would be pleased to hear that you used the money that way.
I think we decided that I'm going to be writing up this report in the next couple of days to send to the other faculty. And also to Catherine Laurie, because one of the things that happened when we were over in Namibia is the students had lunch with Bishop Eaton and with our head of global mission, Rafael Mampika Padilla, and also with Catherine Laurie, two other bishops who were there as delegates. So we did talk about theological education and how we do in our candidacy process, in our formation, insist upon an immersive experience in a hospital or a clinic where they learn pastoral care. And then they have an immersive experience in a congregation, so they'll learn an internship how to do pastoral ministry. But they do not have an immersive experience in a broader, wider church experience. Mm-hmm. And until we really invest in theological education in this way, I think we cannot continue to think that we're going to be developing the support we need to develop for the church's work in the world. Mm-hmm. Because I think those ties that we've had so strongly built through the work of Wentz when he worked on the Constitution and all the people that mm-hmm. Gettysburg has contributed to the work of mm-hmm. the worldwide Lutheranism, that it's you can't teach that in a classroom and expect it to remain mm-hmm. alive.
They I'm going to open a door for you, Mary, and if you want to go there, please do. If you don't, it's okay. But do you see all this as a contrast to an America that tends right now, at least in its administration, of pulling up the drawbridge and hunkering down here in our own little territory?
Yes.
I wish you wouldn't beat around the bush.
No, I think that...
The whole idea is that this is to give an international immersion experience.
Well, it's also to help people understand the power of these relationships and not to be so... not to succumb to the idea that the United States is here to deliver the rest of the world our goods or to be performing all these benefices for all these poor, needy people around the world. To just give up on that notion because there's so much more that can happen when we get off our high horse and realize how much we need mm-hmm. to have relationships of encouragement. So, for instance, for me, and this will probably touch up against some issues that relate to my work as a woman, as a professor at a theological seminary in this country. I'm very, very lucky that people have invested in my career, people have responded positively to my work as a woman. That's not true everywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And also, when we receive students from overseas, most of the time, especially if they come from Africa, they're men that have been selected by some other process than... So most of our students, if they do run into an international student, it's a male pastor. Mm-hmm. They don't know what women are doing there. So when I went over to this meeting, I met hundreds of active professional women in their churches, from these African churches, from Latin American churches, women leaders who are very competent doing social ministry organizations for their church, doing hunger eradication in Ethiopia, working in the front lines of the kind of ministry that we want to see, competent, educated women. And I think one of the things I always have to remind myself is those women are out there and they can be my friends and colleagues too. But how do I get to know who they are? They're mm-hmm. not the delegations that come over on ecumenical visits. They're not visible to mm-hmm. us otherwise. And we can so easily think in such condescending ways about those poor women who are suffering, etc. Mm-hmm. But so I needed that wake up realization that there's so many wonderful women to get to know.
And that in complete contrast to some of the Middle Eastern countries where women are oppressed in an indirect sense that we read about all the time. I mean, oppressed, abused, not by only being forced to wear something, but forced to have a lifestyle that is not their own and if not, they're punished severely.
Yeah, we did hear from one person that is just, it's in my mind, it's so vivid. I think that if you talk to some of the other students who were on this trip, and I hope you can get a podcast interview with some of the other students and see what they also experienced, because we had so many wonderful students who went. But we heard on the day, the theme of the whole assembly was liberated by God's grace, salvation not for sale, humans not for sale, creation not for sale.
Yeah.
So on the day when we're listening to Salvation Not for Sale, here we have this man, Dennis Mukwege, a surgeon from the Congo, who has set up a hospital and repairs the bodies of women who've suffered sexual trauma, violence, babies, children, 20,000, women who have to put their lives back together because someone has shot into them and destroyed their organs, you know. So he spoke about how important this issue of sexual violence is. He said, the world stands up when there's chemical attack in Syria. Why isn't the world standing up to stop this? Because it's happening every single day. But the women that I was meeting, they're working on these things. And so it always encourages me when we go to these meetings, because we're not just hearing about this and ain't it awful. We're actually hearing from people who are doing something about it, and we're seeing people on the ground who are listening all around the world who are saying, my Lutheran faith tells me I have to do something about this. And it's not some kind of ideology somewhere else. It's just we were so formed and encouraged and strengthened in our relationships so that we would say, my work towards this is alongside these other people doing this work.
Faith, justice, and reconciliation, all themes from the experience of attending the 12th Annual Lutheran World Federation Congress in Windhoek, Namibia, with Maria Erling, our guest today. She is a professor and author of The Augustana Story, and we hope you have benefited from this conversation. I'm Jerry Christensen for the Seminary Explorers. Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.